So a quick announcement before we get going. Scheduled the midterm exam for the week after next. Next week we'll have PCB layouts due on Wednesday. I'll be on travel, so there'll be no lecture Friday. And then the following week we'll have the midterm exam. It's going to be take-home format. I'll hand that out on Monday in class, and we do it at the start of class on Friday. Expect it to be 2 to 3 problems, comparable to a homework, but with a bit more thought required on them, or a bit more of a design element to them, which, granted, I have been doing in a number of the homeworks this semester, but comparable in length and complexity. Questions on that?
Yeah. Will you let us know what covers that are, what topology they're going to be like
taking? I will not. I'd be more inclined if it was an in-class exam to tell you, give you hints on what to prepare for. With a take-home, you have access to all the resources. There's going to be state plan analysis, sinusoidal approximation, solving switching losses, and designing for some optimization goal. Fair to assume those things will be on there. Did I miss anything? Other questions? Okay. Questions not related to this? Anything on Tiny Box Challenge people want to discuss?
I remember in 4DG that those intersectors
involved. Yeah. You're always on homeworks and the same thing on exams. You're welcome to come ask me anything anytime. Shoot me an email and schedule. I may not answer something, obviously. But if it's a theory-related question, the goal of the midterm exams, they should be a learning experience. They should help you cement your knowledge of the material. I'm happy to discuss through theory-related things. I'm not happy to discuss, is this answer correct, or how do I do this? But if you want to come back and say, I have this question about state plan analysis, is this correct? Yeah. I won't hold it against you. If you ask something and I can't answer it, I'll tell you I can't answer it, but no penalty for that. Anything else? All right. Layout's coming along. I feel confident they can have that in passing AFE by Wednesday at 9 o'clock. Okay. Good. So last class we talked about these different resonant tank options, compared the merits of series parallel and then two different series parallel combinations, the LCC and the LLC. Looked at them in terms of ZVS and ZCS range, and what the tank currents are going to do as I vary the load. Found that they had various benefits and detriments depending on the tank. Series resonance had this nice ZVS at high power, but we lose regulation as our load goes away. We're stuck at unity conversion ratio. It also had this short circuit issue. If we're operating near resonance, that needs to be handled. As we go through, the LCC and LLC were kind of combinations of the series and parallel tanks that, depending on how we operate them and which regions we employ during operation, can give us some of the advantages of both. And after that, we went and we talked about, okay, what happens now if I apply a controlled rectifier at the output here instead of a diode rectifier? This gives me this extra control freedom, what we call P sub S, which is the phase with which we rectify. It'd be zero phase if it's a diode rectifier, meaning the voltage commutates at the moment the current changes polarity. With a controlled rectifier, that doesn't need to be the case. I can switch before or after the current has changed polarity. We went through and solved that using our same sinusoidal analysis and created a model for what the impedance presented by this rectifier looks like. And then right at the end of class, we're looking at the characteristics of that model. And I'm going to pick up here. I'm going to hop on to the next page where I have a nicer plot of these same characteristics. So in blue, I'm looking at my real component of what we call Z out. In red, looking at the imaginary component. Okay. Where my complete signal, bring it from the previous slide, Z out is R times 8 over pi squared times cosine 2 phi s plus 1 over 2 plus j sine of 2 phi s over 2. Okay. From the previous slide, I was using I apologize. I was being a mathematician yesterday, not an electrical engineer. So we'll use J for our imaginary number. And forgive me if I switch back and forth. So there are some interesting things going on here. So by switching over and controlling this phase, on my plot here, this axis is phi sub s in radians, and I've limited to just the minus pi over 2 to plus pi over 2 region. The reason for that, if I look back in my derivation, I out was 2 over pi IF1 times cosine phi of s. From minus pi over 2 to plus pi over 2, phi of s is positive. This is my range where I'm getting positive output power. If I try to go negative, it's going to want to be pulling that current back. So it's going to be a problem with my resistive load. My true resistive load is going to want to go to a negative voltage. At a negative voltage, my body diodes of the FETs are going to conduct. Things are going to fall apart at that point. So looking just over my positive power range from minus pi over 2 to plus pi over 2, here at 0 phi s, what I get back is my diode solution. My real component here, what I'm plotting here is Z out divided by this, just the cosine and J sine. So this is Z out over our RE, R times 8 over pi squared from before. This is my scale factor. So at 0 phi s, my real component is 1, my imaginary component is 0. Back to what I had for the diode rectifier. And as I begin adjusting this VS, I'm injecting some imaginary component into the impedance that's loading the tank. So I could look at this model as some Z out, which is loading my tank, VS and IS. If I want to be a bit more specific on what this Z out looks like, I could say, well, it's some real component, our new RE, what RE prime to differentiate from what we solved before for the diode case, in series with some purely imaginary component, J times ZE. And I further split that and say, okay, for phi s between minus pi over 2 and 0, I have some negative imaginary component in the circuits that's going to look like some capacitance. And for 0 less than phi s less than pi over 2, I'm going to have some positive imaginary component. I'll name these LE and CE. And what I have in my Z out is really just a fixed component, imaginary magnitude. So if I want to solve for a capacitance or inductance that gives me back that same magnitude, I'll say Z out is equal to RE plus ZE from this model. RE is equal to R times 8 over pi squared cosine 2 phi s plus 1 over 2. ZE is equal to J R times 8 over pi squared sine 2 phi s over 2. And my CE, both of these CE and LE, I'm just going to get by relating the magnitudes of impedance of these elements to my imaginary component. What's that going to give me? Well, for LE, I'm going to say J omega S LE, so the impedance of the inductor at my switching frequency is equal to ZE, which has this J component in it. I'm going to have LE is equal to ZE over J omega S, and my J's will cancel. And I'll get just this divided by my switching frequency. So I can model this as an inductance if I'm looking at my sinusoidal approximation of single frequency. Okay? But if I look over a wide range of frequencies, that inductance is going to vary with switching frequency because what I'm injecting is really a constant imaginary magnitude, not a J omega L. But at a single frequency in my sinusoidal approximation, I can model it like this. And over here, what I'd have is 1 over J omega CE is equal to CE. So CE is equal to 1 over J omega ZE. And my J will square and I'll get a negative sign there. So what does this do for us? Potentially this is now a control freedom that can benefit our converter. So I can now, by adjusting the phase of my rectifier, dynamically alter the tuning of the tank network. Okay. I can inject in some inductance to push my resonant frequency down during operation. I can inject in some capacitance to bring it back. I can, some converters, if I see myself beginning to lose EBS, I may be able to inject in inductance and help that situation by improving the inductive loading on the primary. Okay. The next couple slides, I'm just showing, let's hop to these. We'll come back to that conversion ratio. So for my series resonant converter, here's an example with C sub S that we've been talking about equal to zero. I get back exactly what I had for the diode rectifier, right? Curves look no different, input impedance, transfer function. As I begin changing Vs, so now Vs is pi over 8, I see a little bit of shift in my curve. So by going to positive V, injecting inductance into the circuit, and it's pushing my resonance very slowly back to the left. In addition to the component due to Vs, this is all normalized here. So the magnitude of the effect of this phase shift is going to depend on RE, is going to depend on what my actual output resistance is. As my output resistance goes to zero in the short circuit case, this all goes away no matter what Vs is. So my short circuit case is always going to look the same. This is my short circuit, and then my open circuit was way up here. I go through, I begin pushing left. I go to pi over 4. The effect is more significant. I can see my resonance pushing towards the left. A little bit more at pi over 3. And here I'm approaching my pi over 2 limit positive power flow. Okay. I did pi over 2.1. Back at our plots, this would be my pi over 2. So I'm somewhere just below that. I'm dominantly reactive in my loading of this bridge, and I've significantly decreased the resistive component. So it effectively allows me to operate with higher Q for the same resistances. Applied at the output of the converter. And then finally, if I go all the way to pi over 2, what I end up with is no loading on the tank. I have no resistance because I get to this point on my plot where both my real and imaginary components are zero. I'm effectively the short circuit case always, and I have no output power. Okay. And what this is doing, I can think about in my C sub S is equal to 0. If I looked at my current at the secondary of the tank, IS, I rectified in phase with that for I out. And then as I begin shifting this phase, I'm shifting my rectification point all the way down to the point where here I have my IS and I out is rectified pi over 2 out of phase. My average output current is 0. I'm essentially just circulating current back and forth, rectifying such that I dump some energy into the output capacitor and then pull it back every single half period. And if I have resistive load, I have no output current, so I'll go to 0 volts. So let's look at then how this is going to alter the conversion ratio of the system. If I look at my complete model here for this AC link converter now with a controlled rectifier, I have now some RE and ZE where RE was 8R over pi squared times cosine 2 phi S plus 1 over 2. ZE is 8R over pi squared sine 2 phi S over 2. The J, my I out, we solved in the previous class 2 over pi IS1 cosine phi S. And then my input port is really going to be the same model I had before. Okay. There's a different impedance applied at the output, but everything we solve for the controlled switch network at the input still applies. We solved that before we even looked at what the loading impedance is. So that's going to give me same thing. This will be 2 over pi IP1 cosine phi in. I'll check myself. Okay. This will be 4 over pi VG times sine omega ST. Okay. Same things from before. So here I want to look at the conversion ratio. They're similar to what I did before. I'm going to say my conversion ratio, M is equal to V out over VG. And I can again split that up into working my way back a number of different transfer functions between voltages and currents. I'm going to write this again as V out over I out times I out over IS1 times IS1 over VS1 times VS1 over VP1, VP1 over VG. And if I multiply these out, my diagonals will cancel and I'll get V out over VG. Looking at my model, what are each of these terms? V out over I out is still R. I out over IS1. I out is this thing up here. So if I divide by IS1, I'll get 2 over pi cosine CS. IS1 over VS1 is going to be 1 over my impedance, RE plus VE. VS1 over VP1 is H of S, my tank transfer function. And then VP1 over VG is 4 over pi. Okay, so if I combine some things here, I'll bring my 4 over pi out front. This is R times 8 over pi squared cosine VS times 1 over, and I'm going to plug in for RE plus VE so that I don't have to undo some of my trig work. I'm going to plug in here before we multiplied out my cosine terms. I'm going to plug in R times 8 over pi squared cosine VS times this VS. So this was R times 8 over pi squared cosine VS plus J sine VS times H of S. This and this all cancel out. This thing that's left, 1 over cosine plus I sine. Cosine plus I sine has magnitude 1, pure phase. So if I'm looking at a magnitude for my conversion ratio, all I care about is the magnitude. That means that M is the magnitude of all this. So M is still magnitude of H of S. What's different is H of S. Okay. H of S was RE over ZN before. Now it's RE plus ZE over ZN. I've altered my input impedance and my transfer function because these impedances are part of that transfer function, right?
RE over ZN?
Yeah.
Where is that just messing that with?
That was my SRC result. I don't think I have it in here, but we could. We need to consider a specific tank to really solve this out. Let's say this is my tank for the SRC. And in my previous case, I had it loaded this way. H of S, the transfer function from VS, or from VP to VS. RE over SL plus 1 over SC plus RE, so RE over ZN. It's specific to the series resonant curve where I have no other shunt impedances. Okay. So while we're here, now if I throw in ZE and call this RE prime, what do I have? CN is SL plus 1 over SC plus ZE plus RE. H is equal to my transfer function is still, or my conversion ratio is still the tank transfer function. It's my tank transfer function that's changed now. And potentially a bit strange to work with because this ZE is just some fixed magnitude. This is not an S times L. This is just a J times something fixed, depending on cosine TF. More often, working with that kind of a model is a bit of a pain. The other issue with it is, go back here, that what I have defined this model in terms of is this phase CF, okay? Which makes a lot of sense. That's what's going to affect things. But that CS is really the phase here, the phase of VS over IS. Okay. This is the phase when I applied some current. How out of phase was my voltage? If I want to actually operate this converter, I'm not going to be likely. I could put in sensing and try to do this and control that directly. But more likely, I'm controlling the phase between my primary and secondary bridges, telling my primary bridges switch at this time, and then 100 nanoseconds later, I'm telling my secondary bridge to switch. Right? The gate drive signals are my real control action, and I'll inherently have control over the phase between them. If I want to control this phase, I need to be sensing currents and trying to very quickly regulate that voltage versus current phase. So more likely, I'm controlling sometimes called VAB, which is the phase of VP over VS, or phase of VP minus phase of VS. And with this model, although I think it's useful to look at what the rectifier is doing in terms of real and imaginary impedances that are presented back to the tank, or to kind of understand how this is happening, more often than not, working with this constant value complex impedance is a bit of a pain. So the alternative then is to look at a model where I consider, instead of a load resistance, some constant output voltage. This model will have a couple of advantages. One, it's bidirectional. If I have an application where I could be sending power to the right, to the left, for example, between a DC voltage and a battery. If I have some battery charge discharge circuit. The other advantage is I don't have to worry about all this dependence on load resistance. I don't have to worry about VS. Instead, what I have is a voltage source whose magnitude is going to be 4 over pi V out, because the same way we derived at the input, I've got a square wave of magnitude V out being applied back to the tank. And that's going to be a sinusoid omega F T minus whatever my phase is relative to the primary. And then I can keep my same model here where this is 4 over pi VG sine of omega S T. And this model tends to be a bit easier to work with. The difference is you have lost your load resistance. Okay? So I'm going to give it an output voltage, give it a phase, very similar to what we were doing with state plane analysis. Solve what the actual output current is, and then find out what my load resistance for that operating condition would have been. That being said, if I'm regulating a DC output voltage, and I sweep CAD, I'll find what all the control angles are for any power at this voltage. That'll be my control trajectory for regulating that voltage over a range of output power. Does that make sense? Okay. So I know in the past with state plane analysis, some people asked about this. How do we just put an output voltage there when this will actually be a load? And well, the truth is, how often are you powering a resistive load? You know, you don't really care. What you care is how much your power you're supplying to it. When you get into dynamics, you may care what the characteristics of that load are. But if I can tell you for 12 volts, this is the phase that'll give me 12 watts, what the resistance is for that is somewhat arbitrary. My load wants 12 watts at 12 volts. Here's how I do it. Make sense? So just to complete this model out, everything here we've solved before, but this would be 2IS1 over pi cosine CS. So CS is still part of this model, but I'll be able to easily solve it because my voltages are independent of it, just my control and my operating point, whereas CS is a derived parameter for the function of the operation. Okay. And then this remains 2 over pi IP1 cosine Cn. Okay. So this model is now really looking at the same circuit we've previously analyzed using state plane analysis. I said, I'm going to allow phase shift between the primary and secondary bridge. We did the series resonant converter. This is still general to any tank, but if I go specifically to the series resonant converter, I can compare to our previous results from state plane analysis. This came from lecture 22. So this is our result for the output current for a series resonant converter using state plane analysis in normalized form. I've denormalized that and plotted that versus the output current with our sinusoidal approximation. I'm looking at a series resonant converter with L is 10 microhenries, C is 75 nanofarads, C is equal to VG is 100 volts. Does have a transformer, but n is equal to 1, so analytically I can neglect it. And my switching frequency, I varied from 200 to 800 kilohertz. And with these values, this corresponds to a normalized frequency of 1.1, 2.2, and 4.4. And then I'm plotting those cases here. See, for F is equal to 1.1, operating very close to resonance, state plane analysis, sinusoidal approximation, very similar, very little error. As I change VAB, this phase shift between the primary and secondary bridge, I'm somewhat detuning the network. I end up with a little bit more error up at high phase shift, but near resonance, my fundamentals has C's a low impedance. All my harmonics see a much higher impedance. My fundamental approximation does a pretty good job. As I go up to higher frequency, moving further from resonance, I have less of a difference in attenuation between my fundamental and harmonics. And now I see more of a difference between state plane analysis and sinusoidal approximation. Now, with what I'm looking at here, I'll call state plane analysis the correct solution. It's considering all the dynamics of these switching actions and the different resonances. Sinusoidal approximating in a way is only the fundamentals. That being said, state plane analysis not perfect, and what we derived, we didn't have the ZVS switching actions analyzed in there. We neglected those for this equation. But relative to the model we have, if switching is instantaneous, this is exact. This is our approximation. Okay. Questions on that? So that more or less wrap up the topics that I wanted to cover in sinusoidal approximation. I wanted to give one kind of comment on applications here. So when we look back at the series resonant converter and my DC to DC converter, I can argue, well, we're all experts now in state plane analysis and it's more accurate, so why wouldn't I just always use that? But there are benefits to the sinusoidal analysis. One is it still is a little bit quicker. You can look at things a little bit faster and look over a wider range of operating points. The other is there's a lot of applications where it's going to be a very valid approximation because you have an extremely high Q in your resonant tank. One of the big ones today is wireless power transfer. For wireless power transfer, I'm going to have a converter that looks just like our AC Link model. I've got some kind of VSI, some rectifier, either controlled or not, and then some tank in here. My tank in this case consists of a low coupling factor transformer, which is my two wireless power transfer coils. It means that I'm going to have very small shunt impedance and large series impedances on my model of this pair of coupled coils. And then I'm going to have these matching networks, which are necessarily going to be very high Q multi-stage reactive networks. Okay? And there's a couple of reasons for that. First and foremost, if this is a wireless power transfer system, I've got these big coils in free space. They need to be out in free space and unshielded so that I can transfer power between them. But that also means they are radiators. And any harmonics that end up on these coils are going to radiate and cause me to fail EMI. So I need to cut down any harmonics above whatever frequency I'm transferring power at so that I don't fail EMI testing. Okay. Second is likely to have this system work to be able to transfer enough power to have it small enough size. I'm already operating in a fairly high switching frequency, fairly high fundamental going through the tank. I have significant harmonics up above that, so it will be very lossy. I'm in the limit on my AC resistances. Okay. So in practice, these things are already going to be multi-stage, very high Q. I need to design them such that it's true that my tank only has the fundamental in there. Okay? The series resonant converter wasn't really a constraint. I just said it's close so I can model it that way, but here it's actually a constraint in my design. This needs to be almost purely the fundamental. Okay? So state plane analysis would be quite difficult here on the whole thing because I might have a dozen L's and C's in there. That aren't going to reduce nicely to a single LC resonance. The sinusoidal approximation would be able to model this quite accurately. Okay. Similar things I've mentioned in the past, the electrosurgical generators, electronic ballast, they have similar constraints. We're trying to get nice clean wave shapes, there's already going to be very high Q network required. Time do we have? I think I can get through this. Let's try. So one other topic I wanted to cover here, I've mentioned as an aside a couple times, is ZVS assist circuits. So how do I add some auxiliary circuit to a converter to extend my ZVS range? And the idea behind this is I've got some main power bridge, got in this case, a voltage source inverter, so I'm at a fixed DC bus, and I connect from here out to the rest of the converter. And I run my design, I put this converter together, and I find that over some operating conditions, I'm losing ZVS, and I'd like to modify in order to get it back without changing the rest of the converter, not changing operation or tank design, because I already did that, it was hard, I don't want to do it again. So I'm fixed on my converter, I just want to modify ZVS by adding something that'll have minimal impact on my operation. Okay. So with most of the sinusoidal approximation, what we've been doing is looking at this inverter as a voltage source inverter, meaning that it can be pretty well approximated as a voltage source. And it's got relatively low output impedance. If I turn on the high side, I'm getting VDC at the output. If I turn on the low side, I'm getting zero. If it starts to have significant impedance, then I've got an issue, not just in what we're about to do, but also in efficiency of the system. There's a big drop across those sets. So I'm going to design such that this is true. And my connection now is this out to the rest of the converter. So if I'm losing ZVS, what it means is that I don't have sufficient current at my switching instance. My sinusoidal approximation, I'd say I need more inductive loading. I'm back to state plane analysis, I'd say I just need more current right before I shut this set off. Okay. So if I want to improve that behavior, if I think about adding elements here, like controlled current source, like extra inductive loading, I'm adding elements in parallel with the voltage source. I should be able to do this without affecting the remainder of my circuit, right? Now, you know, of course, that V-switch is not an ideal voltage source. I will have different behaviors in the dead time if I'm getting ZVS or not, and this will have some cascading effect on my converter, right? But to the extent that we can neglect that dead time, I should be able to add shunt current here without significantly affecting converter behavior, okay? So what do I want out of this current? Well, ideally, we looked at this previously, if V switch is something like this, say I've got V switch with respect to half the DC bus, so this makes sense being zero centered. What I would want for current, I'm gonna add in some auxiliary current that I'm going to pull out of this node. And ideally, when V switch is about to go low, what I want is current pulling out of that node to assist it. But when I switch the FETs off, it's going to bring it low. Kind of draw an IOX. I want this and this. And if I could create some kind of controlled current source right connected to that switch node that provided me this kind of current, that would help me out with ZVS. It could speed up my ZVS if I was getting it, but my dead time was too long. It could, if I was hard switching, inject enough current to overcome whatever my tank current was and still have my correct polarity and get me ZVS in reasonable time. Okay. So there are a ton of different ways to do this. Many of them very specific to your topology and what you have available and where you can connect things. Okay. And if you go out in academic publications, every conference, there'll be a few new papers on a new topology that's a buck with a ZVS tank hooked somewhere weird. But just to give you an idea, I want to show a few examples of how I could hook up a ZVS tank to some example topologies. Okay, so probably the most simple and common one, if I have this main half ridge here, what I can do is attach an inductor. And what I want out of this inductor is really this kind of waveform. Without extra control, I won't be able to get that, but I can get this type of thing if I attach a DC voltage to the other side of the inductor, right? Then my square wave will create a triangle wave current in the inductor. And what I need that voltage on the other side to be, this is V switch. I need a voltage here, average value of V switch. Otherwise, this inductor current's going to run away. So I can do that in a number of ways. Really, I just need a capacitor to block that DC component. This thing looks pretty familiar, right? I think you've seen that topology before. A buck converter is a thing where the output is the average of the switch node, right? I can put this tap wherever I want as long as it's going off to a DC node. I can put it up here if I prefer. I can put both of those as long as I'm blocking the DC component of that inductor and letting the square wave influence a triangular current in it. And I tune the value of LOC depending on what the amplitude of current I want is at the switching instance. If I have a full bridge as my main power stage, this is a full bridge. This is the rest of my converter. Here I'd have to go off the other direction. Okay. I can do the same thing on both legs, put inductors out and two caps. If I look at the AC equivalent circuit, much like we've looked at with the parasitic drain to source caps, all this stuff is in series parallel. I can reduce it down to something that looks like this. Just a inductor across the switch nodes, capacitor. Ideally, if this is my series resonance for DAB, the topologies we've looked at, there is zero average on that voltage, right? This is my voltage going to the tank, goes plus VG, minus VG, back and forth, and it should have zero average. So this cap, much like we looked at for the DAB, is some DC blocking cap. If I'm a little bit off in my waveform timing, this inductor will saturate. I put a big DC cap in there. It'll prevent it from saturating. Okay? So unless I want to sense current and regulate it in that inductor to make sure it doesn't have a DC component, I need something in there to prevent runaway if my timing is a little bit off. But functionally, analytically, I could neglect that cap. Behavior will be as if the cap is not there. More of a practical consideration. Okay. A couple other options. Here, really both of these, I'm playing on waveforms that are fixed for my converter operation, right? So here, this voltage applied across this new inductor is the voltage going to my tank and my AC link converter. And it's going to be defined according to by analysis of the converter. I can't change it just for this tank, right? If I want to be able to have some control over the tank current, I'm going to need to alter my topology in a way that I generate an extra control freedom, okay? So here I add duty cycle. That's going to be needed to control my output. Here I have duty cycle and phase shift. Those are both needed for my converter. Here, what I could do is if I took whatever I was doing with this converter, and I'm independent of topology and application, but whatever I was doing with that half bridge, I'm going to split that half bridge in two, and I'm going to now run my converter as two parallel phases going to one output. Okay. So if I was doing a ZVS buck, I'm going to make my buck half the current rating, split it in two, and run them in parallel to the output. Okay. Then the phase shift between these two is some new control freedom. The duty cycle of each is controlled to regulate to the output. Phase shift between them, I can do whatever I want with. By adjusting that phase shift, I can then put a ZVS tank here And if these two are in phase, I'll develop zero current in this. If they're completely out of phase, so I'll develop my largest current in it. Dynamically adjusting the phase between them, I can adjust how much current is in that ZVS tank, how much I supply for ZVS. Why is that a good thing? Well, in a lot of the topologies we've looked at, and generally most topologies, I have some range over which I already get ZVS, right? My DAB. Above Tmin, I get ZVS. It's just below that that I'd like to be injecting extra current to help me get ZVS. Right? With this kind of solution, I don't have that control. I'm getting the full current always. Whether I would have gotten ZVS or not, I'm going to have this extra triangular current and the conduction losses associated with it. Okay. Here, by adding an extra control freedom, I can regulate that down. So if I'm at full power where I've already got ZVS, I can reduce or eliminate the current in this ZVS tank so I don't have the extra conduction losses. Okay. And then the last one that I want to look at is called the auxiliary resonant commutative pole. This is covered in chapter 20.4.3 in the book. These are my main sets. Mentioned this before. These are some auxiliary sets, aux sets. What I do is I put an inductor here, a capacitor if I need it. My main sets are big high power devices. They go to the power stage. These are some smaller devices that are used, and I again, control the phase shift between the main FETs and these new FETs, which do not participate in the main power conversion process. They're just phase shifted from the main FETs to control the amount of current in this inductor to inject. So they'll switch a little bit before the main FETs to ramp up the current, inject it for ZVS, then switch to bring it back down to zero. This is covered in 20.4.3 of the book. I'm out of time. We'll pick up on Monday. Enjoy the weekend.